Yesterday, I updated our website for like the first time in a long time.
Crazy.
Well, because there's not much we even like really put on the website besides like I just have it as another platform because you can listen to them on our website
Yeah,
too.
it's always
So
good to have more options. You never know.
there's one email subscriber to our website. Don't know who you are, but thank you. And if it's myself, like that's really embarrassing, but I tried to see who it was and it wouldn't show me. But I don't get email updates, so whoever's out there getting email updates, you're better than I am. I'm trying to think of what's even happened since we last recorded. We've had
I
a
don't,
big
literally
break.
don't remember when we last recorded. That's something to
It's
talk about, though,
December.
is instead, rather than having loose, random, unannounced hiatuses, just start planning like mini seasons
Yeah.
where it's like we do a burst of, 8 to 10 episodes and then take a 4 week break and just briefly not have to think about it.
Yeah, we should do that, but then you'll have to tell me what is best because you're the one that has work and I don't.
Well, of course, yeah, but
Yeah, so we're gonna try and get on some new schedules so and like actually put it onto
I think
our bio or whatever on
the
our
breaks seem to be
Instagram or
good for us,
something.
mental health wise,
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on in our lives.
but if we schedule them, then it feels more professional for how unprofessional all of this is anyway.
Yeah, so that'll happen
Yeah.
soon.
So we'll announce that when
But
we actually sit down and when I sit down and look at a calendar and
what have I done since we last recorded? Which was the Halloween episode is the last one we put out, so I guess that's as good a time as any to take a break. Is after Halloween.
I think yeah.
I didn't we talk about our tattoos on the last one? I think we did,
I think so.
because I
Because
think
we
I
got them
said
right before
like
Halloween, and we
yeah.
recorded the Halloween episode right before
And I think
Halloween.
I said like by the time this comes out, we'll have matching ghost
Yeah.
tattoos.
Well, now we do have them. If that wasn't an update.
Yeah, I have an additional tattoo that I got since then.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one in person. Wow, it's under your shirt.
I got my
Shows
first
me
ever.
a sleeved shirt.
I got my first ever tattoo on what part of the arm would you call, like the
It's the upper
upper
back,
backside of the
backside, not
top
like
part of your arm?
underneath, like if her arm is against her
And
side, you can still
then
see it.
my second ever tattoo is on my elbow, which is so funny because there were multiple people that like swiped up on my Instagram story and they were like, the elbow was like the worst place to get a tattoo. And I was like, and I didn't want to be that jerk that's like, oh, I don't feel pain. Like, you're such a baby if you have one there and you couldn't see it. Because I literally responded to them. I was like, oh, actually, it didn't hurt that bad. There were a lot of parts I couldn't even feel. But I didn't want to be like the jerk that's like, sorry, it was painful for you, but it was not at all for me. But I mean,
It didn't feel like hot razor blades,
no.
because that is what my ribs felt like.
No, it really felt. There were like, she started, and she goes, okay, so this is what we're working with every time she starts. And I legitimately had to look over and see if she was actually touching my skin with the
Was the
needle
same
because I was
person
like,
we went to, right?
yeah.
She was also just very good at
Yeah, she's really good.
very good.
I want to keep going back to her.
That's what I was thinking. It's like I'd like if I
But
can have her as my
yeah.
person.
But I was like, oh, okay. And then like I'm sitting there the whole like literally I didn't flinch at any point, didn't have any. There was one time she hit like a nerve in the elbow, which literally made this part like go like this.
Yeah, but you can't help
No, and
that.
I was like, "Oh, you've hit something." And
See that
it
little that
didn't
knee-jerk
hurt, but it was
reaction
just like
thing?
moving. But yeah, so for me my elbow didn't hurt, but don't listen to me because I think I just have a different pain tolerance than most people. But yeah, that happened. I had my final college class that I got 100% in, so that's exciting. I'm not gonna say I graduated
Until
because
you
I'm
actually
waiting
do.
to see. I'm gonna wait until that certificate comes in the mail and then I'll announce on here that I've graduated because this school has screwed me over one too many, more than one too many times to count that I don't trust anything they're gonna do.
I'm sitting here poking myself aggressively on my elbow versus my rib cage, and I'm like, no, my ribs are more sensitive. Maybe that's just me. I know ribs are supposed to hurt, but I thought elbows were supposed to be worse. Here, the thing is, the ribs still weren't as bad as the back of my leg. But on the tendons right above the knee,
I
because
know
I also
here
have
hurt
one
more,
there.
but I was like, that's probably because she was going like towards where all like you have my sensitive skin like here,
Yeah.
and she kept going towards there and had to do like white highlight and everything there. So I was like, well, she already went over it once,
The
and then the
highlight was
second
the
time,
worst. Well, that's why they always say coloring in is the worst
yeah.
part.
But I was like, No, it didn't hurt.
It looks really pretty in the pictures.
I know, it looks good.
Yeah, looks very... Can you not roll it up?
No, it's too tight.
Your arms are too thick. Oh yeah, I love that.
I know, it looks really good.
Yeah, especially when you get like a whole like bits and bobbles sleeve. Yeah,
the next thing we're going to do is a Ouija planchette.
Oh, yeah. You already have a plan?
She already had it drawn out. Because I said funny. I wanted to get, like, a Ouija planchette and a spider web. And so she drew both of them and then, like, put both of the purple, you know, stencil outline on mm-hmm. it so we could see if we could even, what can fit in what after she does the nice. Spider yeah. web. Yeah.
Okay, that's great that she's now planning out your sleeve.
Yeah.
She's ready to have you.
Well, and then Drew was like, so customer. What are you, and Drew went with me. And then he goes, so what are you getting after that? And then me and her just, like, And I was like, maybe some, like, crystal ball or something with, like, hands or whatever. And then we started, like, me and her started, like, planning out different things.
She's so ready for your sleeve.
Yes. She's like, I'm so excited. So, I guess
It's nice to be a no fuss customer. And then people yes. are like, yes, please come back. You were, like, the opposite of a problem.
Well, no, because I came back and she was like, because I was like, I'm kind of nervous for this to hurt. Because everybody talks about the elbow supposed to hurt, like, as one of the worst spots ever. And she was like, well, you sat like a rock for your literal first ever tattoo, so I don't think this will be bad. And then I like got home and I was telling Drew about all the people saying like, man, that's like the worst spot ever. And I was like, but it really, like, it didn't hurt.
It didn't. Has it made him like think about it more? Because I know
the other night we were sitting in bed and he just looks at me because now you can see this outside mm-hmm. of my t-shirt and you can't see the ghost because yeah. it's up higher. And he looks at me and he goes, well, now I look like a big lame baby because I don't have any. Well, he said, I just look like a big lame baby. And I was like, why? And he was like, because I don't have any tattoos. And I was like, I don't even know if people, like, you're so big and tough looking that would no one the would be more intimidating by you with tattoos.
Has he started looking for an artist?
There's somebody he wants to go to in Nashville. Oh, remind me to show you them after we record, yeah. But. He really, it's a place we both found, and I was like, you should look into this place mm-hmm. for your tattoo. We go there often enough.
Yeah, no, that you can totally yeah. schedule that in.
And I was like, and they're really, really talented. Anyway, where's yours at?
This was the one that was supposed to be in Georgia and accidentally ended up being in Maryland.
My paranormal's a real shorty, but I thought it was okay. kind of fun.
It's fun?
Well, it's like interesting to me. Okay.
We'll have you
which
go
means
second,
it's
then.
Interesting to nobody else.
That means I probably like it.
And hopefully our
listeners. We basically do this for ourselves because we don't
because
get
every
feedback.
Once in a while, yeah, literally, everybody, we got like 10 listeners. Hold on, here, let me show you our stats.
We'll take
actually.
Suggestions.
Yeah, if you want to email us or something.
If there's something that you liked specifically, you're like, oh, I really
well,
like
really
it.
Well, really, the
you
best way to
that.
Go, like, every once in a while I check and it's like 7 to 10 is our normal audience size per week.
I can't
week.
Even think of 7 people who I know who would watch it, so it's always shocking even though it's only 7.
I know, I'm like, oh. Yeah, so I think it's really funny that most of our listeners are in the United States and then second up to that is Australia.
That's wild.
But I mean, how many Australian cases have I done? 2, which is probably more than most American true crime podcasts. Have I done 2? Or is it just the 1 kidnapping case?
I think it's just the 1.
I'll do more Australia. Don't you think I won't?
We see you.
And then 3rd is Germany. I think that's funny.
We've done at least 2 there.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. I always look at that and I'm like, is anybody actually listening to us? But there's never been a week I've looked and that it said audience size is 0. So I'm like, we've got at least 1 person hanging on. I don't know who you are, but we appreciate
someone
you.
Someone who really just needs to fill the void while driving.
If you want to, if you want to hear a certain story, message us on Instagram or comment on something. We don't have a podcast email. I haven't set one up. And then, like, our website, if I wanted to set one up, I have to pay for the website, and I'm unemployed, so I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that.
Just make a Gmail.
Well, no, but then I'll have to, then we can, well, I guess we can put it in, like, our bio.
Yeah.
And people can email us there.
Yeah, contact us at.
Maybe I'll make an Outlook.
You do whatever you want.
Anyway, we'll eventually get an email, but for now, Instagram.
For now, it
find
seems unimportant.
There.
There's other ways to contact us.
TNF podcast. Okay, are you going first?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, so my story is about Sister Cecilia. I have a singular source. It is the New Frederick,
Cecilia.
Maryland. Yeah, Cecilia.
I heard you say Cecilia.
Cecilia.
And I said, that's not, that can't be it.
Like Cecilia.
Sister Cecilia. That's what I
heard. Sister Cecilia. okay. My singular source is the New Frederick, Maryland newspaper. Just the year of 1923, I guess. It was a whole bunch of articles.
It only came out with one paper the whole year.
No, it was a whole bunch of articles. Just, you go, you know, go to newspapers.com. If you got a subscription, you can just, like, search, you know? It's in that newspaper. So you can narrow it down for yourself. It seemed like, I think it was, like, 25 articles I read through. And I was not willing to individually cite 25 articles from a singular newspaper from one year. Sister Cecilia was born Maris Wellen. I'm still stuttering over the last name. It confuses me a little bit. It shouldn't. It's six letters. So Sister Cecilia is her chosen, like, I guess her confirmation name. I'm not Catholic. Anyway, she was born in 1912.
Yeah, what is that called? I don't know.
But, like, yeah, that's her nunnery name. She joins the sisterhood, and she arrives at the Notre Dame Convent in, I think, Frederick, Maryland in 1922. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. She was not born in 1912. She joined the sisterhood in 1912. Is placed in the Notre Dame Convent in Frederick, Maryland in 1922. So she had been in the sisterhood for 10 years.
Okay.
That's it. That's it. That's my fault. I wrote the sentence really poorly. So we're jumping right in to the crime. So around 2:15 on Monday, February 12th, 1923, Sister Cecilia was kidnapped. She had just dismissed a student about 10 minutes before she went missing, even commenting to the student that there had been a man and a woman who had been annoying her all day by peering into the windows of like the room she teaches in. They've been doing it since about noon. So she had to endure 2 hours and 15 minutes of these annoying people.
How weird.
Other people in the neighborhood also noticed these individuals just, like, loitering around the school, convent, both.
Yeah.
This religiously affiliated building. So after the student left, Sister Cecilia, who normally had a student from 2 to 2:30, but that student was out sick that day, had an unplanned break. So she was going to read her daily office, is what it was called. And I think it's like, I don't know, prayers or something that she has to do as a nun for God. I don't know anything about being a
nun. You know what those nuns do.
She wrote it as that was a thing they did. So she headed upstairs, but realized she had forgotten her ritual in the music room. So she returned to get it. I assume the ritual is, again, another special nun item. In the music room, which doubled as a parlor. This parlor was about 25 feet long and had two windows, one at the front that was facing the street and one at the back, which was also a French door. And I think that was, like, facing the inner school area. Like, that was not... The French door was, I don't think, was publicly accessible.
Yeah.
It's, like, a weird, long, thin room. So she's been... There's two people on either side the whole day, and it's weird.
Yeah.
Because one should not be on the other side. When Sister Cecilia re-entered, at the front of the room, she notices that the woman who had been... She'd been seeing all afternoon was again visible at the French doors. And then she briefly noticed a man next to her. So now this person's inside because he strikes her in the head. So she re-enters the room and he hits her. Like in a movie. She was stunned by the blow and then had a piece of drug-soaked gauze held over her face. The drug did not seem to render her entirely unconscious, more just dull her senses enough to make her not remember, because she seemed to be able to walk, because as people were... This is a busy area. People would notice. They'd be like, oh, that nun is being carried out would be... It'd be suspicious. So she clearly had to walk out. It is believed... that she was then walked out of the building and into a waiting car. She awakes in a dimly lit, basically barren room with a cot. So she's in and out of consciousness, you know, like, or just in and out of lucidity. And while going in and out, she hears men in a neighboring room discussing her and their quote-unquote job, referring to, like, kidnapping her, I guess. She claimed that the men spoke with foreign accents. She heard one say, "I wonder what we'll get out of this damn job." And the other man responded with something along the lines of, "It should be worth at least $500, which is around $8,678 today."
What year is this?
1923.
What a time to be alive.
Inflation is bad.
What a time.
Then the men who were talking leave the room. The door between the room they were in and where Sister Cecilia was had a transom over it. So she was able to watch the light through the transom to see, like, when the room was empty.
Yeah.
At some point in time, they'd taken her head covering. And this was, this is a no-no, I guess. You can't be out without and, like, be seen by others.
Okay.
Because she, like, is desperately searching this barren room for something to cover her head with before she bothers to escape. Which is wild to me. Girl. In, like, a life or death situation. But she finds an apron. She puts it over her head. And then there happened to be a coat somebody left in the room. So she puts that on, too. They don't write this in the newspaper, but my guess is this coat is what they draped over her so she would, like, bring less attention. Like, so they weren't, you know, on either side of a nun walking her into a car. They were on either side of a random woman who had fainted, you know? I assume that's why the coat is in there still, because that's what had been placed on her. Otherwise, I don't know why it would be in there, because it wasn't, like, her blanket or something. So in the neighboring room, Sister Cecilia finds many other men, all of whom were not conscious, whether from drug use, intoxication, or sleep, that was not clear. They weren't, like, knocked out or anything. Yeah. They were just out. She manages to escape the building without issue and finds herself in a dark alley that led to the brightly lit street near Camden Station in, I believe, Baltimore. They were really, like, unclear with place names because I think they just sort of assumed everyone would know where these things were happening because it was big news, right? So she approaches a taxi driver asking a ride back to Frederick, but they refuse.
Why?
When I first read this, I was like, that's so rude. Why are they not giving her a ride? So she goes, she asks a nearby policeman to get help to get back home. He convinces a taxi driver to take her, even though she didn't have enough money for the trip. And because she had no money on her.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The trip was $30 then, and that seems like not much now. Like, who wouldn't blink an eye of it helping a lost nun for $30? But that's $520 now. And I get that a little bit more. I understand why the taxi drivers were like, oh, we're not going to take you that far. Because it was, like, a little bit of a drive.
Yeah.
They were not in the same town. So she had been noted as missing when she did not show up at the 3 o'clock rehearsal for something or other at the school. So they figured it out within, like, 45 minutes of her disappearance, which is pretty good for an adult.
That is good.
But
also, like, where else would a nun be?
Exactly.
Than in the place they're supposed to be.
It's specifically because she's a nun, I think, that anyone noticed that it was weird that she, because I don't know if authorities were alerted right away, but, like, people noted it.
People knew.
They knew for sure this, at least this timestamp. Yeah. They had an hour of, we don't know where you were. So she gets back to the convent around 10 p.m. the same day. So this was not a very long kidnapping. The doctor was called, as she was still suffering from both the side effects of the drugs she had, that were on the gauze, and also her head injury.
Yeah.
okay, so that night, like, the police couldn't really question her because she was sort of just both injured and drugged and in, like, a deep stress trauma situation where she just, like, was reliving it in her head but really couldn't say anything out loud about it. Which is, you know, reasonable. She was kidnapped. It should also be noted that, like, I was reading through newspaper articles that are, like, slowly day by day getting slightly different information, and how I had to write it is reflective of that because I did not, like, go through multiple times and, like, rearrange for clarity. So the newspaper then notes that it's odd that the Notre Dame convent in Frederick, of all places, was targeted, and then Sister Cecilia, on top of that, was targeted. They didn't
understand.
Newspaper didn't know why. Why them?
They also said that it was strange that it happened during the day and that no one noticed. But something that they never did, like, mention, either the police or the journalist or anything like that, is no one was like, isn't it crazy that the kidnappers managed to familiarize themselves with the nun's routine enough to, like, figure out when to get her and then pick a day where there happened to be a gap?
Yeah.
To be able to kidnap her, because there wasn't supposed to be any schedule gaps in there, unless they were also just going to, like, take the kid along for the ride if they needed to, and they'd just been waiting for the car all day. I don't know, but no one ever talks about, like, that portion of it. They're just like, but why here?
Well, because it was the 20s. I didn't think like that.
I think the how is more interesting. Also, it's been a very lucky day for the kidnappers.
Yeah, I was going to say, they could have just got lucky for real.
So, Reverend Father, that's his whole title, Reverend Father W.J. Kane, thinks that the motive was ransom, and evidence points to the criminals being amateurs as they left the gauze on the table in the music room, along with the little bottle that was still partially filled with the drug, which was sent out to, for the police to analyze. Which is, yeah, that's not very professional to leave that much evidence. Robert L. Osborne, the cop who helped Sister Cecilia to find a ride home that night, so there was nothing odd about his interaction with the nun. Like, when the Baltimore police officer was like, yeah, nothing was weird. And that's because she had asked for help, saying she had a sick friend in Frederick who needed her, and that after helping her find a driver who they were willing to pay upon arrival, who was, like, willing to agree with this, yeah, with, like, the policeman says, I'm trustworthy. Asked the driver to drive carefully and take the smooth roads, as she was also not feeling well. She never mentioned to him or the taxi driver the ordeal she had been through.
Why? Is she sus? Sounds like it.
I think it says later why she chose to do that.
Okay.
But I don't really, I wrote this like a month ago. And then the next day, the houses around the area where she had escaped were searched, but little evidence was found because they didn't know where she came from.
Yeah.
Because she hadn't talked yet. But they tried to be as on top of it as they could, I think, for what they were going off of, which was basically nothing at this point. And everything that I just read about was from the February 13th issue, which was, the day after this all happened. So okay. this everything I told you was going based off of almost absolutely nothing. Just the bare minimum they could get out of her and others around.
Yeah.
So the February 14th issue, they offer a $500 reward for the arrest and conviction of the kidnappers. An effort began searching for the neighborhood stores around where she was held to see if they could locate where the hat, because there was also a hat, and coat had been taken. Yeah, that she had taken were from. So the hat and coat she left in, because she also left with a hat along with the apron.
Okay.
They were seeing, do you sell this? Do you sell this? To all the stores in the neighborhood that she walked out into.
Mm-hmm.
Locals were interviewed. 2 days after the event, Sister Cecilia was improving, though still scared that people were still after her. So she's just paranoid she'll be kidnapped again, because she doesn't know why it happened.
Yeah.
Or at least they might come, we don't back know.
Or whatever, yeah.
Maybe she had a reason. We don't know what she was doing.
Father I Kane, said maybe she's just sus.
Is interviewed saying that when he first saw the gauze in the bottle after the student had noticed that Sister Cecilia, a student had noticed that Sister Cecilia had not shown up.
Okay.
And then told him. And I think the kid actually discovered the gauze in the bottle and showed it to him, and he sort of claimed that he had done it. Either way, they just find the gauze and bottle, and that's when he fears that she has been murdered, and he does notify the police.
Okay.
I know before I said I don't know if that happened, is because they didn't know either in the article. Though the police did complain that he delayed the reporting and believed that if they had been notified sooner, they would have caught the kidnapper leaving in the car still, because they would have stopped, because they did stop all of the main car pikes,
mm-hmm,
which is just old-timey word for highway, main thoroughfare. But if they had, like, again, if they'd been told sooner, they could have stopped all of them sooner and maybe have found her in the vehicles. So by the 17th of February, it is reported that the police chief received a letter from Atlanta, Georgia, believing to be from the KKK.
Oh.
Though it was said that they did not look further into it.
Okay.
And that was basically all they had so far of anybody saying I did it. The case is revisited a few more times, and in the paper, there are no new leads, as in, like, they don't report it in the paper. They do repeatedly report, though, that Sister Cecilia was suffering from various mental health issues that, like, would be normal with having gone through such traumatic experiences. But they also just sort of imply that she should just get over it already and, like, really spill the beans to, like, the media. Like, they need to know more, Sister Cecilia. You need to just stop. We need to be entertained.
Fair enough. Nothing else to be entertained about.
So now we're to July, so it's been a number of months. The issue that I read from. July 17th is the issue that this information is in. So apparently on March 28th, a package had arrived with a stamp and a Baltimore postmark, but it had not been delivered by the mail carrier, which is weird.
Dun dun dun. Illegal.
It was also addressed to the Visitation Convent, not the Notre Dame Convent, that it, like, arrived at. At Visitation, the Mother Superior had opened it and saw that the contents... saw what was inside of it, like what was inside the package, and called Notre Dame insisting that the Mother Superior come over ASAP. So it did not arrive at Notre Dame. It arrived at Visitation. And okay. Then the woman in charge was like, yeah, this is...
somebody isn't going to see this.
Definitely not ours. So the package contains Sister Celia's headdress and... Gimpy? G-U-I-M-P-E.
No clue how to pronounce it.
Some part of the garb. And a note, but not her habit. So they're still missing a piece of what was taken of her outfit. So the note read, "I am sorry for what I did to you, but my brother, who is a gambler and a KKK, obliged me to do it, that he could get some money. Forgive me and pray for me." That was the note that went with it. Which means that a original letter that they got from Georgia might have been, like, semi-legitimate.
Yeah.
And the foreign accent might have just been Southern.
That's too funny.
So analysis of the note led to the conclusion that the author was educated.
Uh-huh.
It had been partially handwritten and partially printed and had excellent punctuation.
Education.
But I like that, like, they went through the effort of, like, trying to conceal themselves by doing the half and half.
You know, not a bad idea.
Yeah. So shortly after the package arrived, the Notre Dame Convent received a call from a gruff female voice, which asked if the washerwoman had come yet. Then they asked if the Mother Superior was in, and Sister Cecilia, who happened to answer the phone, replied that she was busy and to leave a number, and she would call them back. And they're like, that is our Sister Cecilia, not a
different
one. She just happened to answer the phone. But that's all they got. That was their suspicious phone call that day. Then March 31st, the doorbell rang, and a black woman who tried to push inside asking for work was at the door. So she's, like, trying to get in through the door. And in the meantime, behind her, another black woman in a cloak was holding a package. When the woman holding the package noticed that the nun who answered the door saw her and that she was holding a package, both women quickly left, briefly exchanging a few words while then walking in different directions. So, like, they seem to be related to it, and that this package might have included the habit. They're trying to return in a non-suspicious way, and these women had just been hired to do it. I don't think they were involved in any other level. At the time, they believed that the police believed that the second package was the missing habit. I think it's really interesting that the kidnappers have, like, gone through lengths to return these items.
To return stuff, yeah.
So, between...
well, like, we're not actually bad people. We just really needed some money.
Yeah. So, like, it was a ransom thing.
Yeah.
So, between the time of the packages and the July newspaper update, the police reported as having continually worked on the case, but could not find any further news about the kidnapping. Oh, and then I could not find any further news about the kidnapping. But I guess it's, like, you know, she's back. They got most of her outfit. There's only so much you can do. But yeah, they never... it's an unsolved case. They don't know. We don't know who kidnapped Sister Cecilia.
That's so weird.
But it was just, like, a really random newspaper article.
Can you imagine being in the family where they're like, yeah, remember that time me and your grandpa kidnapped a nun for $500 or whatever it was.
You know somebody has that story.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Can you imagine being in that family where that's like what they talk about every Christmas or whatever?
They make jokes about it.
Yeah. Okay, so my story today is about Stratford. I'm going to say it wrong multiple times.
What part?
Because Stratford. It looks like Stratford, not Stratford.
Well, here's the thing. So they might say it without the letter.
Anyway.
That's how they say Trenton in New Jersey.
Stratford Shoal Middle Ground Lighthouse. I got my information from newenglandwithlove.com, wikipedia.org, newenglandlighthouses.net, ctinsider.com, and werewolves.com?
What?
Werewolves? werewolves.com. So.
That's funny.
We'll start with the history. Adrian Block was the first European to explore Long Island Sound. He identified two low islands at the site of current Stratford Shoal during his 1614 voyage. Might as well tell that, because... Anyway, so the shoal was first marked for navigation in 1820 by a pair of spare buoys placed on its north and south ends.
I love how, like, these gaps are always like, this place in New England was discovered 400 years ago. But nobody did anything with it until 50 years ago.
So, in 1831, Congress gave $1,000 to erect a warning beacon on the shoal, but no further action was taken on the project. The beacon was to have had the shape of an iron spindle. If that's relevant to anyone. So later, Congress gave $10,000 for the construction of a floating light for Middle Ground Long Island Sound. I don't know why they've got to make that so long, but whatever. So the lightship that was constructed was 73 feet long and weighed 100 tons. It carried a lantern on each of its masts, plus a hand-operated bell and a foghorn as fog signals. It was anchored off the southeastern edge of Stratford Shoal on January 12th, 1838, but 8 days later, it drifted off its station. The lightship, quote, would display a chronic inability to hold its station in future years, even after its single anchor chain was supplemented with second and third anchors. So nothing could hold this ship down.
Which makes that very inaccurate.
It was dragged from its station by ice more than half a dozen times. The worst was in 1875 when it ran aground at Orient Point.
Oh no.
And in 1876 when it drifted to Faulkner Island.
The lighthouse ship keeps crashing.
So the Stratford Shoal Lighthouse was completed in... They're tired of this. Lightship business, so they're gonna do an actual lighthouse. It was completed in 1877 to replace the lightship. The lighthouse was constructed on a small man-made island. It had two stories for living quarters for a keeper and two assistants. Originally, the lighthouse keepers were housed there to maintain the facility, but it was one of the most isolated and difficult places for keepers, I think, in like the whole United States.
Have fun.
So in May 1905, the keeper, the main, like, head keeper, went ashore and left first assistant keeper Morel Holes and second assistant Julius Coster in charge. So that day, Coster flew into a rage, lashed a razor to a long stick, and attacked Holes with it. Holes was able to fend Coster off and was able to keep the light going that night. The next day, he found Coster trying to cut a hole in the lighthouse wall. He was saying, quote, "The light is killing me. I must escape. I must escape it if I chop down the wall." So he's clearly going insane from, I'm assuming, like, isolation, and he might already have other mental health issues.
Have you looked at this lighthouse?
Yeah.
It's literally just a house in the middle of the water. Yeah. There's no island to go with it, nothing.
Yeah. So later, Holes found him trying to destroy the light with an axe and had to stop him. Coster did manage to stop its rotation for a while, but it wasn't, like, totally destroyed. After this, Coster tried, allegedly, he tried to kill himself many times over the next few days, which, Holes just had to keep, like, literally watch him 24/7 and, like, stop any attempts. Yeah. So, the head lighthouse keeper finally came back to the lighthouse, and Coster was dismissed from his position, and Holes was called a hero for saving the lighthouse, and I suppose saving his life as well if he was... trying to kill himself that whole time. And there were some sources who said that Coster was sent to a psych hospital after this, where he did end up killing himself, but I'm not sure if that's true or not.
I hope he got some help, but also I don't but think anyway, help
the then. Yeah, I mean, like, the main part that I know that did happen was the one guy tries to destroy the lighthouse and the other guy saves the lighthouse. So that all that is true. But like I said, I it was alleged that he tried to kill himself on the island. Yeah. I don't really know. So that's the end of that story. And then in 1969, the lighthouse was automated and is still used today without anybody having to be on that, just in a, basically a floating home.
Yep.
Well, it's not even floating, but on a literally like just a house on a tiny rock. So the lighthouse has historical significance as an example of the masonry lighthouse design used in waterbound U.S. lighthouses right before the use of sparkles lighthouses.
What is that?
That can't be right. I think that's a typo, but I don't know what else that would mean. So it, quote, embodies the enormous cost and heroic effort required to put these designs in place in the treacherous waters of Long Island Sound. So, here's the tiniest little hauntings part. But, I mean, the thing that I just liked was, like, that whole story.
Does it mean, does it use spark plug? Does that seem
spark
right?
Spark plug. That's right. Sparkles sounds better, so we'll keep it at that. Sparkles lighthouses.
They do look like spark plugs, though.
That's too funny. Okay, so, there were reports from keepers, like, after... Like, before 1969, whenever they weren't there anymore. And keeper's assistants, that strange things would happen in the lighthouse. Some said they'd see they'd see doors slamming on their own, see and hear. They would hear crashing noises, and pots of hot water would be tossed onto the floor from the stove. There was a lot of, like, kitchen... item being thrown by an unseen force.
Hot water's dangerous, guys.
Yeah, that's a big... That's a... And heavy.
Yeah.
To pick up a pan with hot water. And, you know, it's before 69, so all of that stuff is heavy.
Yeah, it is.
That's a powerful ghost. So, there have also been reports of chairs being thrown across the room and against the walls, as well as posters being ripped down. So somebody's just, like, really a party people. They're like, oh, you think you're about to boil your pasta? Joke's on you. Dump that on the ground.
It's just been sort of some sort of sea spirit that's been moving the light ship around, and now he can't do that. So he's like, well...
The one thing I can't do is mess with the house
anymore.
So there's a story that a ship named Trustful... had struck the shoal and sank, which killed everybody on board, and the ship was said to have been carrying a load of church bells, and to this day, it is said that you can sometimes hear the sound of muffled church bells in the area when there is bad weather, which I like that.
That's kind of fun.
That was the other thing I saw, is the sound of muffled church bells after a ship crashed into it, and then I couldn't even find if the ship crashing into it was true, but I was like, don't care, I like it. So
either way, I hope
mariners,
the bells are real.
Yeah, mariners who pass by the lighthouse have also claimed to hear lots of banging noises and grinding noises and, like, loud sounds coming from the lighthouse as if there's, like, somebody inside, like, working on something. Oh, but
I just sort of assumed that was just weird, gross ocean noises on something that's not supposed to be there.
I mean, it could be, but...
Because the ocean makes a lot of weird, gross noises.
That is the end of my... very shorty Stratford Shoal Middle Ground Lighthouse. I know. I was like, I mean, this is really short, but I like this story. So, and that's in Connecticut, New York-ish. I don't know. There were references to both states, so I looked. And then it never really says which state it's exactly in, so. Anyway.
It's adorable.
You can't visit it on the island, but you can take a picture from land, I think, with it in the background. Or on a boat, maybe? I don't
think
remember.
You'd always see it on a boat.
Yeah. Okay,
based on the pictures I saw. That's what I'm basing everything off of. Yeah. The Google images.
Yeah. That's all I've got for this. We have another story to tell right after this.
But it'll come out a week later.
Yeah. Sorry about it. Try not to kill anybody and don't mess with Ouija boards. Bye.